Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan, and you're listening at CindySheehanSoapbox.com. Well, today, again, we have a very excellent show. Our first guest is Karen Tostado. Karen is from UnitedWeStrike.com. And our second guest will be a returning guest, and it's economic hitman and best-selling author John Perkins. Karen Tostado, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox, or I should say welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Well, thank you for having me, Cindy, and thank you for all you do. And also, I want to tell you that I really think that you are exemplary, and I know that you recently are celebrating the anniversary of Casey's death, and more power to you. I wish that people really understood why beautiful people like your son had to be sacrificed for banking interests.
Well, celebrating's not the right word. I think commemorating it, it just passed. That's true, and it doesn't get easy on a personal level. Of course, we miss him every day, in every way. You know, as his mother, every second of the day. But you know, and like you said, on a political level and a policy level, things are still continuing the way they were when Casey was killed, and now our country's bombing another country, and it just seems that things appear to be getting worse and not better. But tell my listeners what you're involved in and what they could be involved in also.
Well, we recognize that we've been lied to on every front imaginable and some that we cannot even imagine. And like you just mentioned, now we're into Libya and our men and women are not even considered as troops. They're considered as boots on the ground. According to Kissinger, they are dumb, stupid animals to be used as pawns in foreign policy. We think that it's enough. Our money pays for this. Our money pays for the depleted uranium, and now we've got radiation falling upon us, and the Environmental Prostitution Agency has just raised standards of some of the toxins up over 100,000%. It is time, folks, to say no to this system, to say yes to peace, and to take our money and to pull out of this system. We're encouraging people, activists and people all over the world, patriots, regardless of what position you take on whatever front, if it's foreclosure gate, if it's the illegality of these wars, if it is against vaccination or genetically modified foods, we've all been lied to, manipulated, and stolen from, but we outnumber the few in power. And when we rise to the occasion of pulling out of the system, we can make a difference. We're asking people to join us April 15th, 16th, and 17th in a strike and an economic boycott of multinational corporations. The easiest way to participate is to simply not spend one single solitary cent in multinational corporations. If you can take it further, if you understand just how important this is, you can stay home, keep your children home from school. If you can't do that, if you feel that you must work, bring your lunch or buy your lunch from a little locally owned sandwich shop by mom and pop. But don't spend any money in the corporate system. This would give us 3 days of keeping our money out of the system and of picking up the phone and letting your MIST representative know why you're not spending. Your whatever topic most speaks to your heart is what you should let them know. But, folks, we are being taken for a ride right now with the radiation, with the toxins in our food, with the chemtrails, with everything. The least we can do is understand that our money funds all of this. And how would we react if bombs were going off in this country? We've got to understand that they don't hate us for our freedom. They hate us because we use drones. And our money, our taxes that we're still working for now, pay for the atrocities being committed. And we pay for CEO billion-dollar bonuses while we lose our homes and go to debtors' prisons for fines as low as $4,000. This is unacceptable. So we're asking everyone globally, don't buy anything from multinational corporations or anything you have not researched for yourself. Don't comply by keeping any more of your money in the system than you need for monthly bills. Try and find local ways to support your community and ask why. Why are we here and what are we doing about it? Are we part of the problem or part of the solution? We outnumber them. When we stop playing their game, when we honestly go on strike, imagine the power of empty streets, empty banks, empty airports, empty markets for 3 days at least to send a message. We need them to start serving us and not as the main course for their greed.
Well, I think that one of the things that we can do, like you said, is to stop supporting these multinational corporations and to really support the local mom and pop shops and people that aren't chains, and, you know, to really put our money back into our local economy and not our global economy. But the globalists, I'm having John Perkins on next, and he would call what we live in a corporatocracy. So the corporatists and the globalists of this world, they're making it increasingly more difficult for us to do that because they're putting these people totally out of business. But I was just talking to my oldest daughter last night, and we're, you know, devastated about the situation in the Gulf of Mexico and the situation in Japan, where Japan's dumping, you know, tens of thousands of radioactive water into the ocean there. And if these people kill our oceans, they're killing the world. They're killing our planet. Well, not the planet. They're killing life on this planet, which includes them, which includes their children and grandchildren. And, you know, I was telling my daughter, there's over 6 billion of us, and we're letting a handful of people kill us. How does that work? How do we continue to keep letting this them rape our planet and kill us without us even rising up? Karen, do you have the answer to that? Because I sure don't have the answer to that.
And no, Cindy, as a matter of fact, I am amazed at the apathy. But then again, over $200 billion a year, again, our money, on public perception management. And if people would only grasp the simplicity, yet the power that we have when we do come together. There is a time for marching and picketing, but not right now. Let us show them silence. Let's show them that we don't think it's right for our children to be out playing in the radioactive rain. We don't think it's right for the EPA to raise standards up to 100,000 times over the limit just to make Japan look okay. And I heard also that it's another corporation that's running it. It's not the government of Japan that gets in there, just like the ongoing BP Gulf massacre.
Right, right.
You know, it's just we kowtow to the few. And it's time to take our power back. We also, the 15th of every month, people all around the world join with an economic boycott, and it's to grow, to remember on a monthly basis, and to start understanding that we need to get off the grid as much as possible for as long as possible in as many ways as possible with storable food and water filters, and to come together also and start to look for different ways of thinking and healing and being if we are to save our planet, because you're right, Cindy, military-industrial madness is destroying us. And along with Japan and the radiation and all of the meltdown, the Navy and the Air Force, our money pays for the ongoing war games out of the Pacific as well. And dolphins are washing up, showing signs of being bombed. Mama. Yeah, you know, it's everywhere. It is just incomprehensible.
Well, I mean, we have 6 billion. There's 6 billion of us. We should round them up and stick them in Guantanamo so they can't do any more damage to us. And I just, it's just mind-boggling to me that this is allowed to continue. And I thank you for your efforts. And we only have a couple minutes. I know you have a website that people can go to. And I really encourage people to take part in the strike for the days you're calling them, and to pass it around to your friends and let them take part or give them an opportunity to also take part in it. So what's your website, Karen?
It's UnitedWeStrike.com. And then taxfree15.com. Right now it's just a simple one page. I changed hosts and we're going to have to rebuild the whole site. But it really is about power to the people through peaceful unity. And thank you very much, Cindy, for endorsing this. You know, we're going to have a 3-day marathon also on United We Strike. We've got our own station now. We've got archives going 24/7. We'll have live special coverage the 3 days of the strike.
Well, and also that, of course, everybody knows what April 15th is. That's our our federal income tax filing deadline. And I just want to encourage people also to look into tax resistance, because since my son was killed, I've become a tax, I don't know the terminology for it, because I'm one of the ones that just doesn't file. And some people file and just don't pay. And so I'm one of the people that doesn't file my income taxes. And I refuse to be...
Here?
Yeah, I refuse to pay for the crimes that our government is committing all over the world. And as much as possible, I know I and probably many of my listeners already don't shop at multinationals or buy gasoline and, you know, try to be off the grid as possible, you know, as much as possible. But that's good, and I encourage that. But we really need an international response to these criminals.
We do, and we also need the power of individual empowerment and collective action. And that's why we encourage folks to, regardless of what stance they're taking on one issue, we want them to take action with us the 15th of every month, so we'll grow and we'll be heard. The hardest thing that we have to overcome is our lack of ability to unite. We've got to set aside our smaller differences and go for saving our planet and the future for our children.
Well, Karen, thank you so much for your work and for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox again, and good luck on these endeavors. And I am going to Vancouver that weekend to participate in their Earth Day celebrations, but if I can find some time, I'll definitely call in for your marathon.
That would be great. And also know, Cindy, that there are a group of people now working on Earth and Sky Day, because we'd like to see the chemtrails out of our skies and also to clean up our oceans.
Well, yeah, I think that all goes without saying, but we have to say it. It goes without saying, but we have to say it. So, Karen, thank you, and I'm sure we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you very much, Cindy, for all you do.
That was our guest, Karen Tostado. Well, next up, as I promised, we have economic hitman, or I should say former economic hitman, and best-selling author John Perkins. John Perkins, welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Great to be with you, Cindy.
Oh, thank you. So, John, the thing that's on a lot of people's minds, actually, in the movement, but they're also talking a lot about it on the corporate media, is what's happening in Libya. Now, I know that the take on the corporate media is just a bunch of propaganda. So I would like to really hear your analysis of what's happening in Libya right now.
Well, you know, you can't take Libya out of the context of what's happening in the entire Middle East.
Right.
And certainly there's a revolution going on there. And I think later we're going to talk about Latin America. And it really started in Latin America, but it was peaceful in Latin America. You've got a very different situation in the Middle East, partly because the United States is so deeply involved there, Israel is so deeply involved there. We've got huge military bases there. We've got a huge presence there. There's Iraq, there's Afghanistan. There's so much going on. And I was an economic hitman back in the 70s working for Sadat in Egypt. I was in Egypt. I was in Saudi Arabia. I had projects in Kuwait. I spent a lot of time in Iran. I always used to wonder in those days, when these places were going to erupt, because it was so obvious from so many standpoints that there were a lot of very unhappy people. These people have gotten more and more unhappy because as more and more oil has been sold in those countries and the country's leaders have become wealthier and wealthier, the people have, in fact, become poorer and poorer. And this current recession has really highlighted that for them. At the same time, they're very aware of what's gone on in Latin America, and so it's finally erupted. And the Internet, Facebook, Twitter, all of those social networking media, as we all know, have played a role in this. So the whole area has erupted. And in some places, we've been sort of supportive of that. I think Libya is a very interesting one because we've always had this kind of love-hate relationship with Gaddafi. But more recently, it's been a love relationship because he really has protected big corporate interests, especially oil companies, in recent years. So I think we really didn't want to see Gaddafi go. But once it became obvious that there was such a huge uprising against him, we had to modify our position. So I think right now the United States is in a very, very, very interesting position where we're not exactly sure what we want to see happen, but we know we don't want to go too far from the status quo because we want somebody in power who will protect U.S. corporate interests there. And, of course, I'm not speaking for myself. I'm speaking for the administration, for the CIA, for the Pentagon, for the oil companies.
Right. Well, but what I've been hearing, and of course, President Chavez in Venezuela, who really, I think, was one of the people in the vanguard of this revolution in South America, this people's revolution and uprising, has been very supportive and denounced the U.S.-UN intervention in Libya as, you know, a demonization campaign against Gaddafi for some reason. And what then the uprising, we even have people like Robert Gates saying that we don't even know who the rebels are, but we're going to support them. You know, what do you think about the President Chavez's support of Gaddafi and, you know, the claim that he's being unjustly demonized?
Well, you know, it's a complex issue. Obviously, Chavez has to be somewhat supportive of Gaddafi because he could be next.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to find this with any world leaders who are on the corporatocracy or the Pentagon's blacklist or gray list, and Chavez is certainly one of those,
mm-hmm.
That they will always have to stand against U.S. intervention. And to be honest with you, in general, I'm against U.S. intervention of any sort.
Uh-huh.
I do sympathize with the idea of trying to protect innocent civilians, but there's a very fine line between protecting innocent civilians and interfering in another country's politics. And we've seen, for example, in Iraq, that we went in with the assumption, there were a lot of assumptions, there was a weapon of mass destruction, but one of the biggest ones that appealed to the American people was that Saddam Hussein was a bad guy, an evil, brutal dictator. There was some truth in that, certainly, but the country's an awful lot worse off now under U.S. military rule than it ever was, than it ever was under Saddam Hussein. And, you know, we've got the fear that the same thing is likely to happen in Libya when we stepped in too strongly, that a country that has perhaps not the best of leaders by any means, but still a local, a Libyan leader, is going to be a lot worse off if it's under the armed control of a foreign power like the United States.
Well, since we talked last, there's been a successful coup attempt in Honduras, and an unsuccessful coup attempt in Ecuador. What's your thoughts about that, and your analysis about that?
Well, you're absolutely right. The first one was in Honduras against President Zelaya.
Mm-hmm.
Zelaya had promised to increase the minimum wages of Honduras, and he also wanted to introduce a new constitution that would take a lot of the land out of the hands of the foreign corporations like Dole, Chiquita, Kraft, Cargo, and help workers in some of the sweatshops that were owned by Russell Athletics and other organizations. These corporations lined up very, very, very strongly against him. They used the excuse that the new constitution extended his rights to be president for another term, which was true, mm-hmm. but it only meant that he would be able to serve a second term like any U.S. president. It wasn't as though he was trying to serve for a lifetime. So that was a red herring. The real issue was the increase of minimum wages and the land reform, which these companies saw as a huge threat, not only in Honduras, but because Honduras is one of the lowest wage rates in the hemisphere, that would mean that probably every other country would increase their wages, too,
mm-hmm.
or be kept
mm-hmm.
too. So in comes this coup, and it's a classic coup, a CIA coup that's led by a local general who was trained in the School of the Americas. There's no question that he was a CIA puppet. It was a coup that was extremely reminiscent of the coup that, Chiquita, then known as United Fruit, had launched against Chavez in Guatemala in the early 50s.
Absolutely, yes. I was just thinking about that when you were talking about that.
Yeah, it was classic. It was the same kind of coup, and of course every country in Latin America, except I think Colombia, which is a U.S. puppet, renounced the coup and stood up for it and demanded that the Zelaya be reinstated. The United States did not take a strong stand in that regard, and now this the Zelaya's out. There's a new dictator who is brutal and has done away with freedom of the press to a very large degree, has really clamped down on people. It's a classic case, Cindy. It's so reminiscent of the old days, of the times of when we went up against Mossadegh in Iran and Allende and Arbenz. And on the other hand, you have Ecuador. The president of Ecuador, Rafael Correa, whom I know personally, he has a PhD in economics from the University of Illinois. He's a man who knows our system very, very, very well. He was much more prepared for a coup than Zelaya was, and it also appears as though the CIA made a huge mistake in that instance. They selected as a guy to head the coup a commandant in the Ecuadorian police force who had been trained in the School of the Americas, but he was only with the police, and the army, the armed forces, never backed the coup. They stood with Correa, and that made all the difference. So Correa overcame that coup and is still president, thank God.
Well, that was an amazing night, because I don't know if you did, but I was watching the whole thing on TV, live as it was happening.
Yeah.
That was pretty amazing that we can do that,
isn't it?
That was totally amazing. And of course, we were very, very excited that the coup was not successful and that Correa went before the people and right away and talked to the people of his country. But also, you wrote recently an article about a victory that the Ecuadorian people had, and I'm writing a book called Revolution, a Love Story, about mostly about Venezuela, but of course about the other revolutions that are happening in South America, about how people who basically were, and many still are, illiterate peasants are taking back their countries, and they're taking back their economies and their ecologies, and they're doing it in a very courageous and forceful way. But tell my listeners about the article you just wrote called Ecuador, Another Victory for the People.
Well, yes, but, there's been this lawsuit that's gone on for over 15 years now, the largest environmental lawsuit in the history of the world, on behalf of 30,000 Amazonian Ecuadorian people against Texaco, which is now owned by Chevron, for the terrible pollution that Texaco caused in Ecuador. The alleged amount is 16 billion gallons of toxic waste. Now, that's 16 billion. The Exxon Valdez was 11 million. The BP oil spill in the Gulf was 210 million. In Ecuador, it's 16 billion. And in the case of Texaco in Ecuador, it was intentional. It was not an accident. They did it as a cost-saving measure, dumping toxic waste down the rivers into huge pits that they dug in the incredibly fragile Amazon. This lawsuit's gone on for years, as I said. Texaco, Chevron hired some of the most powerful, most aggressive, most ruthless lawyers available in the United States and Ecuador. They had staff between 30 and 40 at various times, full-time. The Ecuadorians had essentially three lawyers, one from the United States, a very brave Steve Donzinger from New York City, and two Ecuadorian lawyers. And they won. The Ecuadorians won, which was amazing. And the pressure that was put on the judge in Ecuador, including there were people murdered, there were bribes offered, there were all kinds of things that went on. So the fact that in the end, the Ecuadorian people won against this behemoth corporatocracy corporation, Chevron Texaco, is a huge victory. Now, Chevron Texaco is saying they're going to appeal it first, and second of all, they're also saying that even if they ultimately lose the case, they won't pay because they have no assets in Ecuador, therefore Ecuador has no recourse. Mm-hmm. It's a horrible thing for a U.S. corporation to say, and who knows whether the Ecuadorians will ever get the money that they deserve to clean up this area, if they possibly can clean it up. Who knows whether they'll get it or not, but the fact is, it still is a major, major victory.
And you talked about when we were talking about Gaddafi in Libya, you talked about that, Hugo Chavez is on this list of corporate enemies to the United States to be overthrown. And what do you think the status is of that? Are there economic hitmans actively working in Venezuela right now? Hitmen working in Venezuela right now? Or, we know that the so-called National Endowment for Democracy is actively working down there. What's the relationship between National Endowment for Democracy and the CIA and the economic hitmen?
Well, I'm out of the business, Cindy, and I can't speak from personal immediate experience, but I can say that I have absolutely no doubt, and having been in communications at various times with Chavez and Morales of Bolivia and Correa of Ecuador and other of these leaders and their staffs, I know that there are economic hitmen at work there. There's no question about it. We put a lot of pressure on these countries. Correa has said many times that he knows his life has been threatened, and he's also been offered huge bribes to go along with the system. Chavez has said similar things. There's no question that this kind of thing is going on. And the big hope is that now, in the last less than a decade, 10 countries in Latin America representing more than 80% of the population of South America have democratically, without violence, brought in these new leaders. And every one of these countries during most of my lifetime, every single one of them was run by brutal dictators, almost always put into power by the CIA and kept there by the CIA. So things have changed. Like you said, the people that we consider illiterate to a large degree have been behind some of this, and of course there's a lot of very literate people behind it too, but the indigenous people have played a huge role in some of these countries. There's been this amazing movement in Latin America. It's been successful, and it's been essentially nonviolent, and I think it offers hope for the rest of the world. I think Latin America is today the leader in democratic movements, peaceful democratic movements.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned this, because this is the next question I was going to ask you about the connection to the indigenous movements between the leadership of, they're not only democratically elected and very oriented towards democracy and grassroots change, but they also have indigenous roots. We know President Chavez has indigenous South American roots, and for sure Evo Morales of Bolivia does also. But the one thing that this new leadership and the rising tide of this change in South America is that enshrined into their new constitutions or their new policy is protection of the environment, and that they think that the environment, of course, is really connected to the basic human rights that we have, is for our children and our grandchildren and ourselves to live on a clean and a healthy planet. And I know you've been not just connected to the global economic policies, but you're also having a connection with with the earth and with spirituality. Can you comment on how this is all connected to you, to your life, and to the movements in South America?
Well, yeah, I'd love to do that. Thank you. I got started really in 1968 as a Peace Corps volunteer in the Amazon in Ecuador and spent 3 years there. I go back all the time now. I'm a founder of Dream Change and Pachamama Alliance, two nonprofits that work with indigenous people. I have a co-facilitator, Lynn Roberts, an amazing woman who studied shamanism in many places all over the world, including Latin America. We do a lot of workshops on shape-shifting, on shamanism, on transformation, these types of things. And one of the things that we did back in the late 90s was to have gatherings of shamans did these in upstate New York at the Omega Institute through Dream Change, our organization, brought shamans in from around the world, including a lot of Latin American shamans. And at that time, many of these shamans were conducting ceremonies up and down the American hemisphere in sacred sites like the Grand Canyon, the Panama Canal, Mount Shasta, many of the volcanoes in Latin America, to open what they called the acupuncture points on the earth to allow greater flow of spiritual shamanic energy. And they actually feel, and I tend to agree, that is a lot of what's behind these changes, these peaceful changes in Latin America, that an amazing shift happened in the late 1990s through the shamanic work that opened all of this so that it could happen today. And it isn't insignificant, incidentally, in that Rafael Correa, unlike Morales and Chavez, doesn't actually trace his ancestry to indigenous people, but he speaks Quechua, the language of the Andes. And his inauguration, he did several inaugurations. One was sort of the official one in Quito, the white inauguration, if you want to call it that. But his more important inauguration to him was one that he did with shamans in the indigenous communities. And so this is amazing connection and this feeling that something has changed. And it goes back to an ancient legend called the legend of the prophecy of the eagle and the condor that says that at this time in history, the indigenous people, the people of the heart, the people of intuition, the people of the feminine aspects, will come together with the people of the industrial, the technological, the male aspects, and join forces. And it seems to really be happening. But we, the people, and all of your listeners, it's really important that we understand that we need to make it happen. It's not just going to happen on its own. The prophecies say this is a time when it can happen, but we, the people, have to step in and take action and make it happen.
Well, and of course, there's powerful forces aligned against it. And one of the things that we ran into when we were doing the interviews for, supposed to be a documentary, Revolution of Love Story, but that's a long story, and I'm writing a book. But one of the things that we ran into over and over again about the demonization of Chavez and what's happening in the other countries, in the coups and the coup attempts, is that the U.S. empire, or you know what you call the corporatocracy, is terrified of a good example. It's the threat of a good example. And, you know, what can we do to prevent this corporatocracy from essentially putting out these movements?
Well, this is the time when we all must come together and enter this struggle and enter this new era, with this new what the indigenous people call this new Pachacuti, this time of coming together, and realize that one of the reasons that the corporatocracy and the Pentagon and the CIA, all the other tools of the corporatocracy, are stepping up to the plate so strongly in the Middle East, in Latin America, around the world, is because they're realizing that there is a big threat. So I think we take this as a compliment, that things are changing and they're fearful. The empire is crumbling, let's face it. And so the real question is, what comes next? You know, in the last few hundred years, we've moved from a world that was dominated geopolitically by religious organizations to one that then was dominated geopolitically by governments to now one that's dominated geopolitically by the big corporations, the corporatocracies who call the shots everywhere, including in the United States. And now the question has to be, what comes next? And I think we all have to come together to make sure that what comes next is we the people.
Mm-hmm.
That we really move into, if you want to almost say it, the vision that was the founding fathers of the United States, a vision that was never realized before, but that now we realize that what we really need is government of, for, and by the people. We the people need to make sure that we continue with this. And each one of us, each of your listeners, has to decide for himself or herself what his, her passions are and talents are, and direct them in that area. You and I both have a passion and talent for writing, and for you for hosting the show that we're doing right now. But everybody who's listening has passion. And they have talents of some sort, and they whatever they are. But we all must direct our passions and our talents to creating a sustainable, just, and peaceful world, a world that future generations will want to grow up in, and realize that it's got to come from we the people. The leader's not going to do that. We've seen this very, very clearly when we've gone from a Bush presidency, one of the most conservative Republican oil men we've ever had as president, to a very liberal a Democratic president, and on the big issues, not a lot's changed.
Right,
the reason
exactly.
for that is the reason is that presidents are extremely vulnerable. The president of the United States is extremely vulnerable on many, many levels and doesn't really have much power. The power's in the corporations, but we can exert our power over corporations. They're dependent on us to provide their goods and services. They're dependent on us to help maintain their reputations or destroy their reputations. We can do that. You and I can rein in these corporations. Our world has been stolen by robber barons, and we need to get it back, and we have to do it. You and I, we the people, all your listeners, we have to do it.
Oh, wow. Thank you very much, John. And I'm really glad we talked a little bit about shamanism and that spirituality of taking back our planet and our futures. And I really, everybody knows you as writing Confessions of an Economic Hitman. And so after I read that, I did pick up your book, Shapeshifting, and I was so surprised and so, pleasantly surprised by it, and, was really excited that you went in that direction. So I really want to recommend that book also to my listeners. If they liked Confessions of an Economic Hitman, they should really go into Shapeshifting. And really, we urgently need to transform our society and the direction this planet is going, but it really has to start with a transformation of ourselves also.
Thank you, Cindy, and I'd just like to point out that my co-facilitator workshop, Lynn Roberts, has a new book coming out. It'll be available this June that takes the shape-shifting to another level, shape-shifting into higher consciousness. And I'd really like to encourage people listeners to go to my website, johnperkins.org, sign up for that newsletter that you referenced earlier, and also Facebook, Twitter me at economic_hitman. I mean, we've all got to keep talking about these things, and also go to dreamchange.org. Come to some of our shamanic workshops, because our shamanic workshops are really about transforming exactly what we're talking about, helping people understand what their talents and passions are and how each of us as an individual can participate in this. So I'd love to meet some of your listeners face to face. Thank you so much.
Oh, I'd like to meet you face to face one of these days too. So, John Perkins, thank you so much for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox again.
My pleasure, Cindy. Keep up your great work.
Okay, you too. Talk to you soon. That was John Perkins. I hope you enjoyed John's interview, and I hope you enjoyed the interview we had with Karen Tostado. I hope you go to their websites and find out more information about what they're doing and what we can do to help change things. Well, that was Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I'd like to thank, as always, my engineer, Scott Cuddy, my producer, Mikey, my webmaster, Rich Bowser, our guest, Karen Tostado. I always get hungry and want to go to Taco Bell when I talk to her. And John Perkins, and I hope you tune back in next week. And I'd like to thank you most of all for listening and most of all for supporting the show. I'm Cindy Sheehan, and I'll talk to you later.
I must make my witness. tell you things are bad? Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. Dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe, and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes. As if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
They're yelling in Baton Rouge.